This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was James Derwinski, who is the CEO and the head of Metra. He has been in that position for 4 months. He came to it after a career on nuclear submarines and working for the Chicago Northwestern and the Rock Island Railroad lines. Metra serves Cook, Will, DuPage, Kane, and McHenry counties. It's been in business for 34 years. Metra has a $1 billion-plus capital and operating budget, and they're operating with some of the same locomotives from 1974 when Metra was founded. Metra serves 11 lines, 3,700 square miles of service areas, has 242 stations, carries almost 300,000 passenger trips daily, 686 trains, 150 locomotives, 186 electric cars, and 845 railroad cars, most of them in dire need of rehabilitation. Where do the riders come from? 40% of the people who use Metra come from the five collar counties, 17% from Chicago, 41% from suburban Cook County, and about 2% from Wisconsin. Without Metra, Mr. Derwinski said, we would need 27 more lanes on our highways. Metra has suffered from 3 years of declining ridership, and that could be because of people working at home, people traveling less, carpooling, and the economy. Metra faces a number of challenges: reduced operating funding, lack of a state capital funding program, and unfunded mandates, particularly passenger traffic control. Metra has engaged in an extensive program of rail car rehabilitation, locomotive rehabilitation, and the purchase of, get this, new locos, but they were built in 1998. Purchasing of new locos at $1.3 million apiece versus $2.6 million for a brand new loco. Safety, Metra's top priority, Mr. Derwinski said. He talked about PTC, a microprocessor program that will cost $400 million, mandated by the federal government. PTC will allow Metra to stop trains whenever the operator doesn't do it properly. It's the right thing to do, stations, curves, and elsewhere. It works on algorithms, and for the entire United States, the cost will be $13 billion. The PTC system will need about $20 million a year in maintenance costs. 150 locomotives will be retrofitted, and the first line to experience PTC control will be the Burlington Northern line. Metra, by the way, has the lowest operating cost per mile and lowest fares of any other metropolitan rail agency in the United States, including the Long Island Railroad, SEPTA, the Boston, and the New Jersey transit system. The challenges that they face are really opportunities. More people ride Metra, congestion will be reduced, emissions will be reduced, and there will be tremendous economic development, translate jobs and other developments related to the growth of Metra. Finally, the nice thing about Metra is you can text all you want on Metra, when you shouldn't do it in your vehicle, such as your automobile, your motorcycle. But on Metra, you can text all you want and not worry about any accidents.
It's an honor and a privilege to be here today. This forum is so unique. I don't know if all great cities have this, but what a place to network, have conversation for over 100 years now about the things that really affect us and the city. Metra, huge part of the city, huge part of the suburbs. We actually are to the point where we're kind of becoming that namesake. We're 34 years old only, believe it or not. In the past, it was actually different railroads, but 34 years ago, Metra was formed. I want to point out all the locomotives up there. I was just thinking about it. The center one there, 1974. How many people in the room are driving a 1974 car? I didn't think so. All right. So this is our operating envelope. It's huge. It's 3,700 square miles. It's roughly the state of Rhode Island and Delaware put together. When you think about it, the areas between the lines that our police actually have to go to respond is the size of New Jersey. We do that with 100 police officers. We probably could use a little more. But we get great support from all the municipalities we run through. Just a couple highlights of our operating profile, and that is 845 rail cars, the oldest fleet in the country at 30 years old. And our 150 locomotives, 29 years old is the average age. So to get an average age of 29 to 30, that means your oldest rail car is now 65 years old, and it was built in 1953. The oldest locomotives date back to 1974. So we clearly have utilized and are continuing to utilize, we're writing that book every day about how long can these cars and these locomotives last. When we talk to our peers, they retired them a long time ago. Matter of fact, they sold some of that to us. So who are our riders? Our riders are 40% right outside the collar counties, 40% suburban Cook, and 17% in the city, and then a few folks come in from Wisconsin. 90% of our riders typically come in to do work and go home from work. So that's our core peak ridership, rush hour type ridership. Without Metra in existence, with the amount of people we move every day, 288,000 currently, they'd estimate we need 27 more lanes for our highways. And I don't think anybody would argue that we're not in the middle of Arizona. There's not a lot of land on the side of any of our highways that's available. So that's a big thing, and it's a big component to make in maintaining the infrastructure and trying to reduce congestion that we have here. One of our concerning things is this is our third straight year in a row that Metro's seen a decline in ridership. We're continuing to try to study that, but as we look at that, you realize that data is not available yet. Is it the changing of the workforce? Is it the changing of the demographics? Do I work 5 days a week? Can I work from home? All of those kind of things really, you know, can change the way people come downtown. So we're going to have to adapt to that. And mobility is going to be one of the big conversation pieces as we move forward. So challenges, we're loaded with them. But our theme today is taking challenges and turning them into opportunities. And what I've been emphasizing with staff, and by the way, I'd like to have all the staff over here raise their hands. There you go. Is taking and look at everything in innovation. How can we do things differently? How can we do things better? If we continue on the same trajectory, well, we know what next year is going to bring. It's going to bring a decline in ridership again, and it's going to bring the same problems that we have this year again. So I'm not here to complain about problems. I'm here to say, well, how are we tackling the problems? Well, we have a reduced operating funding, and that's troubling. That's the sales tax side of the world. We'll talk about that in a second. Last year, sales tax growth was 0.1%. We just got our numbers in from the RTA last week. Traditionally, over the last, say, decade, 3.8%. That's a huge, huge number. In other words, for us, we're operating with $2016 in 2017. We look to probably be operating with $2016 in 2018. But year after year after year, your operating costs go up. We'll talk about why some of those things go up. We've had a lack of a capital funding. Our last capital bill was 2009. We're grateful for the state. And I'm going to close my conversation here today with what the state did for us back in 2009. But the fact is, we really kind of count on that since our birth back in 1984. And one of our bigger challenges is positive train control. So in this forum today, you all are going to help me because you're now going to be advocates and experts. By the end of the day, you're going to be experts on positive train control, how it affects you, how it affects all the people in the area. Because this truly is one of our biggest challenges, not just implementing it, but getting that message out. One of the things right there is talking about the schedule adjustments starting on the BNSF line. So we've been putting positive train control on for a few years. BNSF line's about to roll out, and as it rolls out, we have to do a schedule change. There's a lot of good reasons for that, but at the end of the day, there's not a lot of people who like seeing change, period. So if it's my station got readjusted on the schedule or my time on my schedule got readjusted, it's kind of hard for people to accept that. We got 2,000 already, so if you'd written it on the blue card, we don't really need it anymore. We got 2,000 suggestions in over the last month. The operating funding. So if you look at this, the blue side of the equation is the sales tax. And like I said, it's flat. But the operating side keeps going up. Roughly, we go up about $23 million a year. 66% of that is just the labor cost. It takes a lot of people to run a railroad. Well, if that side's flat, that means the other side of the equation, which is really in green, their fare revenues, that has to go up. I like to say the board only has three levers to pull. They can raise the fares, which brings in more on the green side. They can reduce the cost, which in some cases is something we don't really want to talk about, but actually had to do this year, which is kind of cut service. And then third and lastly, what the board really doesn't want to do is shift capital dollars, those limited capital dollars, into the operating budget. I'd like to recognize Steve Messerly, one of our board members today, and John Plant. Thank you for being here and supporting us today. So, once again, opportunities. What have we done with those limited dollars we have? Capital dollars, we get about $175 million this year from the federal government. We have to spread that out through many things, PTC being first and foremost. But one of the things we've done over the past 5-6 years is we've taken our rail car rehabs and we've really refined them. It costs us about $700,000 to do a car in-house. It's a program that if you go in there and you see it, you can actually watch it move through because it goes from stripping it to putting it back together. We have four different phases. It takes 28 days to put a car in and out of a program. 3,300 man hours. I had the pleasure of taking Senator Durbin out there about a month ago and kind of walking him through the program and showing him how we're spending Illinois dollars. We're keeping them in Illinois. We're putting them at head of household jobs. And we're doing this responsibly. Now, it says right there, the outside contracts could cost as much as $1.1 million. We kind of know that from some of the other models of our sister agencies. So, and essentially, we're looking at basically for every car we rehab, we're saving taxpayers $400,000, really, which is getting repurposed right back in our programs. When I started on the Rock Island where we do this work, we were doing about 12 cars a year. Now, this year, 35 cars. And the way we did that is working with the workmen there, really making them proud of what they do. It's a team effort. And we're putting these cars in service right now at 35 a year. But we want to do more, and we want to do better at it. And by the way, we're really good at it. So we brought to the board a concept of expanding our facility. The facility was built in 1947. Right now we're at capacity. 35 cars isn't the capacity of the facility. It's the capacity of the workforce. We're out of bathrooms. We're out of locker rooms. We're out of physical space to put more people in. We can't even go to two shifts without really kind of doing some things. So taking the board out and having them listen to us and talk with us, we came to an idea about building our first expansion. This is our first big building project that Metro's going to do, minus stations and bridges, and those are huge projects. But this is one that actually supports the workforce and our core mission. So on May 1st, we're going to have a groundbreaking at the 47th Street facility, 35,000 square foot building. It's going to help us train people. It's going to help us relocate some of the stuff inside the building to increase the capacity of this facility. It's Metro's first building that it'll be building like this since 1993. So it kind of tells you how long it's been since we've been able to put this kind of capital dollars in. A very courageous and brave move on the part of the board to take us there and help us grow and help ourselves. We also rebuild locomotives. Now, when we talk about PTC, there was a bad part about that, and that's we had to shift capital dollars, and I'll touch on that more. But for a while, we actually weren't rebuilding locomotives. We actually were just letting locomotives get older. Well, locomotives have a tendency when they get older to wear out. And when they wear out, they have a tendency to have what's called catastrophic failure. Well, catastrophic failure means that the engine goes boom in a bad place. A lot of people know our trains. There's only one engine on the train. So that's bad for the customers. It's bad for business. And by the way, it costs a ton of money to put back together. So we started doing some more in-house rehabs a bunch of years ago. And a bunch of other programs to really prevent that. So we've been now 4 years without a catastrophic failure, and we've actually been starting to pull back on that, what they call state of good repair. In-house, the picture you see there, it's an MP36. We're actually gutting that thing down to the frame, cutting the frames open, and then taking out the head-end power system, which is what supplies electricity to train, and replacing it with a Tier 4 emissions diesel Caterpillar engine in the back. We're doing that now in about 35 days. You can see the price difference there from going outside to inside at 1.3 versus 2.2. Once again, saving taxpayer dollars, doing it in-house. Now, the other project at the bottom, locomotive project, that's actually out of state, and it's because of the throughput we needed. It's not that we wanted to send them away, but the fact of the matter is we had to get caught back up after we had slipped so far down. So that one at $2.2 million is going to Georgia. 1989s are going through right now. They come back with computers for the first time. They come back with electronic fuel injection, and they're going to get another 10, possibly 20 more years. They'll need an overhaul at 10 years, but we'll get some more life out of those locomotives. And then another opportunity. We always taken a look for someone else's used rail equipment that we can make a good use of. And we found these engines in California, San Diego, and also up in Washington. And as you can see here, built in 98. For us, that's going to raise the average age of our fleet way up. $1.3 million a piece. So if you remember the numbers on the previous slide, we're rehabbing our engine at 2.2. These are coming recently rehabbed at 1.3. So what a value to us. Amtrak took very good care of them. We expect delivery late this year, early next year. We're dealing with some things with PTC. They have the same headaches we do on the West Coast. Another opportunity is taking a look at the way we did RFPs. In the past, people might remember we put out an RFP a few years ago for 367 cars. Well, about $3 million per car. That's $1.3 billion. If we get $200 million a year, you can kind of see this equation doesn't work. So the $1.3 billion was supposed to be OPM. I learned that in the budget world, other people's money. And we went down and we asked other people for that $1.3 billion and sold our case, and they just didn't have it at this time. So what we did is we looked at the RFP process, and we brought in a way of doing it where there's going to be a base order, and then it's expandable. So if, in fact, people do show up with some money, we can expand this RFP once we award it to 230 cars, and it'll be good for 7 years. So it's kind of as shovel-ready as you can get. Another one was locomotives, and we're looking, once again, a base order of locomotives. This isn't all we want to change out, but this is kind of what we can afford. So we have now paying for what we can afford in our current budgets. If other people's money show up, we'll be able to go ahead and expand this. Same concept, 7-year concept. And it says they're new or remanufactured. So some people might ask, why new or remanufactured? It has a lot to do with the emissions side of the world. Clearly, remanufactured locomotives are going to cost a lot less than new. Right now, news are balancing between $7 and $8 million per unit. Other work that we're doing here at Metra, we worked with the state and our Z100 bridge over the Fox River. It's actually going to go to two tracks. It was two tracks many, many, many moons ago when the Milwaukee Road owned it. That other bay was taken out because it went into a state of disrepair. Now we're putting the bay back in after they do all, of course, the concrete and structural work. So now think about that. We don't have to wait at the bridge for the other train to go over. So we're glad to see that project going underway. Once again, an improvement back into the system. UP North Line bridges we're doing this year. That's particularly the Deering Bridge going over the Chicago River. Half of our bridges that we operate over today are from the over 100 years old, and the current ones we're changing out on the North Line and UP are 1896. So we're definitely getting our money's worth out of it, but there is so much work to do. Such a backlog on the big capital. Other work we're doing this year, a lot of stations, Ravenswood, Healy, Hazelcrest, Cary, LaSalle Street, New Lenox, Prairie Crossing. Some of these are upgrades, some of these are builds, some of these are brand news, and some of these are modifications, and we're doing a lot of other work. A bunch of years ago, we actually put on some more B&B people, bridges and building people, that actually just go out and take care of stations. So sometimes when you look at what does it cost to operate the railroad, some of that stuff has gone up over time just because of the old equipment, the old stations, and the old bridges that we have to maintain. Getting some newer stuff eventually could drop our operating costs. So safety. First and foremost, on every railroader's mind, everywhere you go, safety, safety, safety. When our customers approach the train, they don't think to themselves, I hope I have a safe ride today. That's actually just part of the understanding of taking public transportation and working on anywhere on the railroad. You think the same thing in the airline industry and even in the bus industry. Fact of the matter is there's so much that goes behind the safety world, and that's our big push. This is a logo I put up there, Operation Lifesaver, Look, Listen, and Live. We just had our chief safety officer get put on the Illinois board for that chapter. So another voice in that conversation. That really is designed to help reduce the grade crossing incidents. Also the pedestrian fatalities that we're starting to see right now. And dealing with mental health issues is like some of the new emerging ways that they're trying to go after that. Every year we carry out hundreds of educational enforcements with our police. We issue a lot of tickets because we don't want to see people running around the gates. We really do not want to see those people's lives disrupted, because it doesn't just disrupt the life of the person that got hit, but their family, everyone on the train, and certainly that engineer. And in 2017, we had pushed for new legislation, doubling the fines for going around the gates. So we're kind of proud of that. People that get that ticket may not think so, but and it's not a revenue generator. It's really a deterrent and a piece of the education. The other thing on safety is that PTC is going to be a safety system that comes. $400 million. I just told you the cost of some rail cars, some facilities. But what are you getting for $400 million? What are we getting for $400 million? Well, if you ride Metra for $400 million over the last couple years and the next couple years, you're getting a safety overlay system that's going to stop the train when the operator didn't do the right thing. So it's going too fast, the train will stop. It won't slow it down. It will stop the train. If the track breaks in front and the signal goes red, it will stop the train. Once again, if the operator didn't do the right thing and slow the train down. Uses all the GPS-based algorithms, looking at the weight of the train. We're $400 million here in Chicago. The nation is $13 billion to put this safety system in. Hopefully, we'll never even need to know that it had to be used. Most of our customers, if the train stops, aren't going to question, was that a PTC enforcement or not? So the idea, of course, is to stop having any type of incident where the train, the mass of the train, goes through a set of curves, crossovers, or whatever, too fast and then derails. So what do you get for positive train control? $400 million, you get a safety overlay system. What is PTC? Everybody uses that PTC term, and then they're like, well, I don't know what's that train thing. So here's your way to get the take home tonight. I'm going to play a little video for you. It's only 5 minutes, and it's going to hopefully help educate you a little bit on where PTC is.
Metra is one of the largest and most complex commuter rail systems in North America, serving Cook, DuPage, Will, Lake, Kane, and McHenry counties in northeast Illinois, operating nearly 700 trains and providing nearly 300,000 passenger trips each weekday. Following a fatal head-on train collision near Los Angeles in 2008, Congress required that positive train control, or PTC, be installed on freight and commuter railroads across the United States. As a result of this congressional mandate, Metra and its freight partners are in the process of installing PTC on all 11 Metra lines. PTC is a microprocessor-based, communications-based train control system that is designed to prevent train accidents. It's a life-saving technology that can prevent derailments and train collisions, as well as increase safety for railroad workers. But PTC is a complicated system. It's not an off-the-shelf technology and must be built from the ground up. Metra expects to spend about $400 million to install PTC and $15 to $20 million per year to operate it. Why is PTC so complex and so expensive? The first answer is hardware. Each Metra locomotive and cab car must be retrofitted with onboard computers and communication systems strictly devoted to PTC. For Metra, that's 150 locomotives, 187 cab cars, and 186 Highliner cars. Then there's the wayside equipment. Hundreds of antennas, towers, and radio communications bases must be installed along Metra's 11 lines to monitor the signal system and communicate its status to the train's onboard PTC system in real time. Along the five lines that Metra directly operates, that's 227 communications towers and 219 wayside radios. The six lines operated or owned by our freight partners, the BNSF, UP, and CN, will also require similar numbers of new towers and communications equipment. Signals and switching points are also being upgraded throughout the Metra system. Finally, a centralized back office system is needed to store and communicate PTC information to and from the trains and wayside locations. Radio frequency bandwidth is also required to handle PTC's communications requirements. Adding to the expense and complexity, each component of the PTC system must incorporate multiple levels of redundancy to ensure continued and safe operation. To carry out this mandate, Metra has had to hire dozens of electricians to install PTC on our equipment, dozens of signalmen to install PTC along the right-of-way, and create a group within Metra's engineering department to design, install, update, and maintain the overall system and back office. The second answer is software. PTC software must be customized to each railroad and its specific attributes. This requires that the specific features of every Metra line be precisely mapped in the field and then translated into the PTC software. It also requires that every train traveling through Chicago be equipped with compatible PTC equipment. To facilitate this work, Metra created a lab to develop, test, and update the software and hardware for every PTC component. The lab duplicates PTC's wayside, back office, and onboard equipment. The lab is used to test PTC system operations as they are developed and will continue to be used to test future software and hardware upgrades. The third answer is interoperability. Chicago is the most complex railroad network in the country, with 1,300 to 1,400 trains operating over multiple railroads every day. The PTC mandate requires that all PTC systems be interoperable. This means that any train operating over another railroad's tracks must be able to communicate with the back office of that railroad's PTC system, in addition to its own system. For Metra, that means our commuter trains must be able to talk to freight railroad back offices, such as BNSF, UP, NCN, and vice versa. And these communications must be seamless. Metra's Southwest service is an example of just how complex this will be in practice. A single train trip on the Southwest service line will require seamless communication with five different railroads in addition to Metra, as the train moves through territories or rail junctions controlled by Amtrak, Norfolk Southern, the Belt Railway of Chicago, CSX, and the Indiana Harbor Belt. PTC implementation is fully underway. Metra's next big milestone will be to have PTC installed and operating in revenue service demonstration on the Rock Island line by the end of 2018. Metra plans to have the rest of its rail lines fully operational by the end of 2020, in full compliance with federal law. While it will cost Metra $400 million to install PTC, this state-of-the-art system will add an important layer of safety to train travel in Chicago.
Not too bad for being put in. We built that in-house. And I was worried, in case the audio didn't work, we actually brought Meg so she could actually... So one of the things that happened with PTC, our board elected, was to put it on top of the list. We had all these other needs, but they said, no, we're going to put this on top of the list. We're going to get it done. It's mandated. Back in 2015, we got the extension for the alternate schedule at this time, which will take us to the end of this year. Metra will have to have four elements in place, which we plan to ask for another alternate schedule within confines of the law. We have to have all the onboard stuff installed. That'll be done here by October. All the wayside stuff installed, once again, by October. The radio spectrum has to be purchased. That's done. And then the revenue service demonstration, our first line will be the Rock Island. I want to thank the BN. I have some people here from the BN for their leadership in this area. The BNSF line will be the first line up and operational here within a couple months. I can't tell you enough the challenges that all railroads have had to come together to learn about here. The vendors are the ones that actually build this system, and every time we need an adjustment, we're counting on those vendors. It's not for the hard work on the railroads. It's right now the speed limit is how fast they can get that software changed and bring it to us. But I want to thank the BN again for their leadership in this area. And then our partners on the UP, they continue are moving forward on that and getting PTC up and running on those three lines. But like I said, our goal is to make it so by the end of this year we can put in for the alternate schedule. And like the video said, the mandate says by the end of 2020, our goal is to beat that. In addition, it's going to cost us another $15 to $20 million. On top of all the other pressures we have, it's going to cost us another $15 to $20 million for the licensing, the manpower, and, of course, eventually component replacement. This stuff doesn't live forever and ever in the electronic world. As we all know, look at your little computer called a cell phone. So how are we doing? Well, we're in yellow on the end, next to Metro North, New Jersey Transit, MBTA, which is Boston, SEPTA, which is Philadelphia, and then Long Island Railroad. We actually are operating at the lowest cost per passenger mile. This is fresh off the RTA press last week on their numbers. And then also the lowest fares. So sometimes people really are frustrated. Metro's raised fares 4 of the last 4 years, 6 of the last 7 years, 50% in the last 7 years. But we're still really, really a value. And some people might say, well, you're only comparing to the East Coast. Well, they're the ones that operate millions of rides a year versus hundreds of thousands of rides a year. This is the only fair way to do it. By the way, I don't think the West Coast is much cheaper if you start talking about L.A. and San Francisco. So we're really trying to do a good job, and I think these kind of show. These are what's called HL2s. They were in the beginning of the video. These are the cars I talked about. The last time the state gave us a state bond program, we were able to purchase 160 of these cars, completing our purchase of that entire switch over the fleet to 186 cars. So these electric district cars operate only on our Metro Electric District. The phenomenal thing about these cars is 25% energy consumption reduction over the old cars. You don't hear about 25% moves on anything when it comes to the fuels behind it. The other thing is on reliability side. On 2016, they had 12 mechanical delays on these new cars. In 2017, they had 8. So once again, when the state gives us the good money, we can show you how to spend it, and we can show you how to make it work very well. This is a great return on investment. So once again, the challenges, we're looking at all challenges, and there's a lot of them out there, and trying to turn them into opportunities. But really, the time is now. And what I mean by that is infrastructure is the gem of transportation. And we have in Chicago here probably the biggest gem in the entire country. Growth, unfortunately, is not a word that we often use when faced with our day-to-day funding challenges here in the region. Catching up to a state of good repair. That's what all transit's doing right now, just catching up. Growth should be more in our vocabulary, and for all the right reasons. It reduces emissions. It reduces congestion. Ultimately, it's the wave of the future. And it means more jobs for the region because there's economic development anytime you can grow a transit system. We need to get there. We have a new legislator coming into town, I hear. Later this year, there'll be a big election. Some people are going to be reelected. There's at least 33 seats changing over. So our message to the legislator is not just Metro's message or the transit message, but all of you need to help with that message. I was asked once, well, what can we do? Well, really, it's a constant coalition of a voice that says the supporting of transit is the right thing to do, and doesn't matter when, if you're there talking about some other project or you're in the office talking about something else going on within your area. Transit is so important to the region, and we need those legislators, especially in Illinois, behind us to make the right decisions moving forward. It's not an easy answer. The sales tax decline, it doesn't have one simple answer. You can watch our board meeting last week when the RTA came over and they gave us a presentation of how that sales tax gets to us. And the fact of the matter is, it's not simple. So the time is now. It's going to take courageous action from our legislator. But I need all your help and support, and I thank you. Oh, one last thing, I forgot. Here's our guarantee. On the roads today, I see all the time people parked in front of each other. They're not exchanging the recipes and talking about the Cubs game last night. One bumped into the other one. Why? Distracted driving. Texting. It's a big thing. The accident rate and the fatality rate's going up in Illinois right now for the last 3 years. So here's our guarantee. You can text all you want on our train, and I guarantee you're not going to bump into the car in front of you.
Jim, thank you very much. That was wonderful. And I'm going to use your last statement. We do a podcast on WGN Radio. I go right over to WGN after our program today. We sit down with Steve Bertrand and the rest of his staff, and we do a podcast, so I'm going to use that quote. Okay, do I have your permission?
Absolutely.
Terrific. Great. Okay, if anybody has any questions that you would like to ask, just hold up your question. There's a way in the back, or you were scratching your head back there. Here we go. Here's a question over here. Leatrice from our staff will be going around. And don't be bashful. I know we have a lot of people here who represent various vendors. You know, you can ask questions. Okay, this is from Eric Talbot. Are you working with the CTA and PACE to set up a paper ticketless unified fare payment system which anyone can use via their smartphone and which will allow for seamless transfer among the three agencies?
Not at this time. We are working on, obviously, with the Venture app in the background and how that works with your bank account and being able to purchase the different fare media. Clearly, in any big city you go to, when you start talking about something that has to travel 40, our longest run, 65 miles, the dynamics change immensely of what it would take a bus 65 miles or a train 65 miles. So we're clearly, just like all our sister agencies, based on a distribution of mileage, and it's a little different, so I don't think we're there yet. The conversation occurs a lot, but looking at the other agencies and looking where we sit right now today, I don't think they're going to want to raise their fares all the way up to us, and we'd have no survivability if we lowered our fares down.
Okay, we have some really good questions here. This is from City Club member John Smith. What is your budget outlook for next year? Will there be fare increases again?
That I won't guarantee, but with only the three levers that the board has to pull, fare increases, cost cutting, which right now all of a sudden looks like service reductions, because this year in 2018, our first year in our 34-year history, we actually had to reduce some service. And a lot of it was for good reason, and we need to do a little bit more housekeeping in that area, look at some of the underperforming areas. But fare increases or shifting our minimal limited capital dollars into the operating budget is really the only options that the board has. I like to say you're taking those capital dollars and you're putting it directly into the fuel tank to kind of emphasize what you're really doing there. Capital is invest in the future. Fuel is what I need for the next run today. So is it a possibility? Absolutely. Is it a guarantee? I'm not going to say that.
Okay. Very good. This is from soon-to-be City Club member. By the way, if you're not a member of the City Club, we're almost at 2,500 members. $50, that's the only requirement. You know, no background search, no fingerprints or anything like that. And it's tax deductible, so $50. Soon-to-be a member from the Union Pacific family, Adrian Guerrero over here asked this question. As Metra continues PTC implementation, along with the automotive trucking industry pursuits of autonomous vehicle technology, what is Metra doing in consideration of this developing technology and policy? Could this be another challenge turned into an opportunity? P.S., Jim, UP loves Metra.
So, Adrian, great question. Yeah, we clearly are part of that conversation, and like when we went to CMAP last time, we talked a lot about what autonomous vehicles are going to be in the future. They're coming. They're building them. They're going to be here. How they collectively work both in the public sector and the private sector is a conversation we need to continue to have. How is it going to work? I just know it needs to work safely, and that would be one of our biggest concerns, and specifically around grade crossings, of course.
So can I just tweak that? It was more directed on workforce.
Well, when the opportunity exists to be innovative and to use technology to try to better your product, I'm all for it. I know there's clear opportunities out there. Drones is another example. Big railroads are using drones now to inspect things that before you had to put people in harm's way and have a lot more people to get that work done. So definitely autonomous vehicles down the road could look at, making our workforce a little more efficient. And quite honestly, in some cases, that technology might make us even safer.
Great. Great question. Great answer. This is from Stanley Watkins, City Club member. Stan, where are you? Back there? He's with the Thomas Wyndham Group. Can you comment on what, if any, impact USDOT reprogramming of Tiger grant funding will have on Metra and on all urban, suburban surface transportation priorities in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it boils down to this. There's a lot of need out there for the recipients of Tiger Awards. All the years we've been going after Tiger, we've only received one. We're going ahead and putting in every year our due diligence to try to get some of that Tiger money our way. As Omnibus 2018 just went through and the Tiger program really kind of blew up a little bit, meaning got bigger, we all look at that as an opportunity. One of our critical concerns, of course, in anything right now with federal is the local match. And so where's that local match come from? So, yeah, we're excited about it. We're going to always put in for things. We have our 75th Street SIP down there that can use a lot of money. It'll uncongest a whole bunch of different things. There's at least 14 different organizations now supporting that. But the fact of the matter is that we will always look for more on the Tiger stuff.
For those people who are not knowledgeable with that acronym, what is Tiger?
Oh, you just stumped me. Oh, Lynette, where?
Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery.
There you go.
Thank you, Joe Szabo.
I always say, other people's money.
Okay, great.
This is from Oren Ulger, who's with the 2IM Group LLC. Oren, where are you? Right down here. Great. What would be the realistic percentage increase in ticketing to help Metra function freely, not depending on OPM?
Wow. Well, there's no one quick jump to that. As our operating costs go up every year, so does the fare side have to come up, or the revenue side has to come up. So let's just say in a somewhat utopic world down the road, and government doesn't have to support public transportation, our fare increases would have to match our operating increases year over year. So right now, currently, we're at $23 million. Down the road, that number is going to grow tremendously. The bigger problem today's environment is the fact that the funding side from taxes are slipping, and they're slipping at a rate that could almost go negative. The fact that they're at 0.1 this year doesn't even let us believe that it could go much higher next year. And there's a lot of reasons. So to actually get to a point where a fare increase would actually make us sustainable, it would have to be a fare increase that's sustainable at the level of about 3% a year. That's about what our operating costs go up. And it would have to be based on the fact that everything's coming in just from the operating side. Simplistically, if you remember the one chart, it's probably looking at about a 60% lift. And that would just get us to the point where we would continue to have to lift every year.
Very good. Thank you. This is from City Club member Larry Falby. Larry, where are you? Right over there. Thank you for coming. His question is, Jim, would it help to ameliorate customer angst over fare increases by explaining more specifically that fares only cover a third of the cost to operate?
Yeah, there's a couple different ways we do look at that. We say it's about a third of the cost to operate because basically you've got the capital side as well. So if, in fact, a person pays $2 or $6 is a better one, $6, $2 goes to their portion of the operation of the train, $2 then goes toward the infrastructure side of it, and then $2 is really, well, I guess I'm missing my twos. But, yes, it is one third. Now, when we put in the entire capital cost, and the RTA estimates that we're at $1.2 billion a year shortfall in state of good repair capital funding, and we're getting about $200 million a year, rough round. We're getting a little bit more this year from some special programs. We're really, that fare is about one-sixth of what we need to actually maintain the system when you put in the capital side of the world.
Okay, we have two last questions. You always have to worry about a question that comes in when the person says their affiliation is retired. Because they're getting their monthly pension check, and you never know what you're going to get from them. Patrick Moorhead, where are you, Patrick? Okay, thank you. Did you retire from Metra? Okay, good. Education, so you better be careful. There is current controversy about adding several Amtrak Hiawatha trains between Chicago and Milwaukee, plus adding holding tracks in communities along the Metra Milwaukee North Line. Question, Has there been any discussion between Metra Amtrak and the state of Wisconsin about introducing the proposed increased Amtrak Hiawatha service instead on the Union Pacific Metra North Line tracks to better serve shoreline communities of Evanston, Waukegan, Kenosha, and Racine?
Personally, I have not had that conversation yet, but I understand that my predecessor and the team has talked with Amtrak about that. Conversations can continue to go on, and there's new players in the game. At this point in time, it's sticking on the Hiawatha line up the Milwaukee. We know that there's some angst in the air about that area. We're looking at a lot of different things and trying to really communicate and talk with all the players. It's IDOT, it's WISDOT, it's the communities, it's Metro, it's Amtrak. It's a big conversation, and it continues.
Okay, final question. Washington, D.C., the present administration, what impact do you see coming out of transportation there that will have an impact on you folks here at Metra?
Well, I guess the first thing to say is that when people hear infrastructure, a lot of us, railroad industry, think rails, bridges, cars, locomotives. When a lot of other people hear infrastructure, they think the power grid, the ports, the airports, the shipping ports, the roads, dams. And so clearly when this last round came out, the Omnibus Bill of 2018, there was an increase that helped transportation, but it probably wasn't exactly what people thought it was going to be. So when you say the president and you say Washington, I think we're still trying to figure out what's going to come. We did, through Congress's support, get more this year. A lot more went to transportation than historically in the past, so that's great. Did it come directly to rail? No, it went to a lot of other different places as well. Rail benefited some as well. But I think there's clear disconnect right now in Washington about the fact where it's going to go. I think Washington clearly gets that we all need the help.
Folks, let's give Jim Derwinski a big round of applause and a thank you.